You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Torque of Stars. It's really great to know that we're able to get him back for a second time. I mean, that first talk we had was a very memorable one, right off the heels of the band's album, There Is No Love in Fluorescent Light. So I got to link up with Torque once again when they were in town to play a big show at our Broken Steel. Torque is such a generous human being, always willing to speak his mind regardless of what the topic is. Clearly that's something that we love, something that I love personally as a music fan and as a human being. So it's interesting, it's kind of difficult to do an intro for this one because, I mean, if you're familiar with Stars, you know what Torque and Stars are about, so there's not much I have to say to you. And if you're unfamiliar with Stars, I kind of don't want to ruin it for you. I kind of just want you to jump in this with as fresh of a perspective as you can. So for those unfamiliar with Stars, I mean, they're a band that's been around for a very long time, making really incredible music. They're still making incredible music, and they're making music that's very much dealing with what it means to be a human being, what it means to have relationships in a very closed off and cold and isolating world. And Torque is one of those figures who, like I mentioned earlier, who's just always willing to speak his mind, and he is a very funny individual because of it. I highly recommend that if you're not familiar with Stars, you check out their most recent album, There Is No Love in Fluorescent Light. It is such a beautiful record. But yeah, for now, let's jump into this. This is the 405 Exchange with Torque from Stars. Enjoy. So it was a real pleasure getting to talk to you a few months back.
I remember it. I liked it too.
Thank you.
It was really fun.
Well, tell me how you're feeling.
I'm feeling tired today. I'm feeling good about art. Feeling good about my band. Love my band. Having a really good time with them. And feeling good about art. But other than that, I would say I'm living like everybody is right now, which is in a state of apprehension and uncertainty and quite a lot of fear and a sense of overwhelming doom. Wouldn't you say?
I would definitely agree with
that. I mean,
that.
Let's be real and admit that seems to be the prevailing mood these days.
Well, it seems like every year, especially with like the thing with the last 2 years, it seems like everyone finds themselves around December time going like, wow, it was just 1 year?
Yeah.
Like,
I know,
like
right?
Like, we've lived, like, several years in the space of just one.
Yes, like, the unbelievable stuff that happened that we've all now forgotten even happened.
Yeah.
Because so much other terrible shit has happened. And just, you know, I mean, I think that I like being out on tour. I like seeing people like Hector who've always cared about the work I do and helped us. And realizing that, like, we do have a real community. We are people who've formed a relationship with venues, with our listeners, with people we work with, and it's a good one, you know, and like it's a healthy world, and as friends and as bandmates and stuff, we support each other, and things are a lot better in many ways than they used to be. So, you know, the economics of rock and roll and the nature of the beast of how hard you have to tour now in order to make it work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Those are small things compared to the fact that at least we have this great family of people, you know? So yeah.
That's something I'm definitely going to touch on later because that's a big thing I really want to talk to you about. But before I do, just in regards to touring, because you brought that up just now, I mean, would you say this tour you're on now feels any different than any previous tour you've been on?
I would say in a way it does, yeah. Because I would say the band's getting along a lot better over the last year. I would say this has been the most harmonious cycle we've ever had, despite the fact that our manager left in the middle of the cycle. It wasn't an acrimonious leaving, and you know, we loved the guy and it was time for everybody to do other things, but it was certainly like jarring in the sense of keeping the car on the road.
Yeah.
But we have had to self-manage because we're still looking at managers and haven't found the right person, and So we've had to like do little things together that we haven't done since like 2001, like dealing with minutiae, with interview schedules, which occasionally we screw up. And, you know, stuff like that. That's like day-to-day stuff that could have gotten us into a lot of conflict, but hasn't. So the tour is feels a lot more ours, I guess, maybe, than other tours. We're not just like wandering into things going, what's going on in here? Where are we?
You know,
we kind of know what the deal is and what the trailer's costing and, you know, all that stuff. So that's good to know.
Yeah, I was really looking forward again to talk to you because I knew I'd get to ask about your new songs. But before I do, I want to go back a little bit to There's No Love in Fluorescent Light, because when we talked last, I brought up that album a lot because that is just such a beautiful record.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Honestly, I really love it too.
It's really something else.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I bring that record up in the context of now there's been some time and a little bit of distance since it's come out. How do you feel about the record now that you've had some more time to live with it?
Well, this is the trick, though, is that, like, I don't know because I haven't listened to it. You know, like...
You kind of have.
No, I swear, this is how it goes. You listen, you make the record, then you listen to the demos, like, literally 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
Then you get the album, you listen to that 18 hours a day for a month. I was just, you know, obsessed. Like, no other record in the world. I'll listen. Then release day comes, I listen to it one more time, and I never listen to it again. Yeah. Unless I'm, like, in a bar and I hear it. So what I know now is the record as a live thing, which is super nice because we wrote it to play live, and we... It's not, like, frenetic, and it's not... we're not trying to, like... You know, on records like Bedroom or Five Ghosts with Electronics, we were very grandiose in the way we... There were so many tracks on the record. Like, so many tracks on every single song. And you learn as you get older that that's a silly way to try and make music in a way, because even though it sounds good in the studio, then you have to go and make it happen live, and then you feel it's incomplete in some way, and it takes a long process of trying to get back to, like... finding the song again. So I would say, I could be wrong, but I think the songs that we're playing them as we're playing them now are pretty close to the record, and in spirit. They might be a little more grandiose or a little more verbose or a little louder or a little more dynamic, I guess, but they're pretty much what we wrote, you know? I mean, it's a lover's rock record. It's
it really is.
You know, it's not a... It's a big record, but it's got a lot of space in it. So there's that's okay. In a live setting, that's your friend, right?
Yeah. But in that regard, do you find yourself surprised with... Because I saw you guys last when you played the Rough Trade shows. And something that really struck me was how much the songs from the new record fit within your back catalog and within the set list.
Well, we're, you know, we are not... Despite people constantly saying, no, Stars went electronic, now Stars have gone chamber. It's like, we've done both those things. We really haven't changed our approach or our aesthetic. And we have no intention of doing so. That's not the kind of band we are. I think it's an amazing thing to be a band like that. But we set out with a very specific idea about what this was. And we love pop music. We love storytelling. And we make pretty songs that speak about the dark things in life. That's what we do. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a shortcoming. But, you know, that's the kind of person I am. Like, I go... When I come to New York, I go to the same places, you know, that I was... When I lived here in 1997, sometimes I go back and I'm like, oh, they're gone. But like,
I was going to say, that's a very rare thing in New York.
Lots of them are around, too. Because, like, you know, things last. But... I love what I love, you know?
Yeah.
We love making this kind of music, and we're good at making this kind of music, and there's all kinds of elements in it. I think there's soul music in it, there's noise in it, there's definitely dance music in it, and there's 80s pop, obviously, but there's a lot of stuff, but it sounds like us, and I think that, you know, Thelonious Monk said, the genius is he who is most like himself. It's like my favorite quote, you know? Like,
it's a very self-affirming quote.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the internet meme version of that is, do you. You do you, and we're doing us. So, you know, that's why it fits, because we're like a tailor on Savile Row. We provide tradition and quality.
It's beautiful to hear you say that, because one of the big things I wanted to bring about with that record is that, you know, having experienced it, and it's funny, I've always, like, been familiar with Stars, but that was the first time I experienced a Stars record at release, listened to it around that time, and listened to it in full, yeah.
Right.
And it made me go back to your back catalog, and being able to do that with that record as a starting point, it very much found me thinking, like, wow, this is very much Stars in an almost distilled fashion.
Yeah.
And something I'm really curious about with you as the artist, you always hear people talk about records that are, this is the definitive record of an artist, but as yeah. you, speaking as artist, do you feel like that's ever possible to achieve, having a record or a body work that defines you in a certain
hopefully
way?
Not. You know, hopefully not. I mean, part of my irrational dislike of Set Yourself on Fire is that we had a defining record, you know, and that every record since has been compared to it. And yeah. on the other hand, it's a lucky thing to have a defining record, because it means that you've pushed past a certain level of public consciousness that allows you to have a career, you know, so...
And some people never even achieve getting a defining record.
Right, so it's a kind of a golden cage in a way, you know, like, I'm glad that record got so much attention, and that not so much that it got so much attention, but that it, for a lot of people, it defines a certain period of their lives, yeah. you know what I mean? It's that kind of record. It's like, those records, Funeral, You Forgot It, and People, Our Record, those records were of a time... that a lot of people presently now writing about music, you know, were 18 to 15, you know, and so those records were huge for them, and that's great. But what I love is that, you know, you said you, the first time you really got to hear a Stars record coming out first was like, I would like everybody to start from our latest one and erase their memories and go backwards, you know, because I think in a way that's a more interesting way of looking at the music, and it actually reveals more about what the music really is. Yeah. And, you know, I think that something that as a music fan I've always tried to avoid doing is like losing my relationship with people who've made more than 6 records. You know, like Elvis yeah. Costello put an amazing record out this year, which I bet a lot of Elvis Costello fans didn't even know came out.
Yeah.
And it's as good as anything he's ever done, you know? So it's a shame that, like, that isn't a more... There isn't more room, I guess, in terms of reassessment, you know? Like, yeah. Yeah. if somebody's making 10 records, let's celebrate the fact that they got there, instead of be like, oh, it wasn't like their third record that we all liked.
I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because that's really weird for me, because of what I do. I tend to have friends who are, like, what's a great way to put it? Who are probably a little more casually into music, who would, like, text me or write me, ask me, like, hey, what's a record I should check out?
Yeah. And knowing... At which point your mind immediately goes blank, right? All my mind, anytime someone says yeah. to me, give me a thing you like or give me a top 10 list, I'm bang, gone, nothing.
It usually does, but then I consider who's asking me and I'll consider what their personality right. is like, and then I'll usually recommend a record.
Well, that's why they do it, because yeah. you're clearly good at recommending things.
I think so, yeah. But something that happens probably 80% of the time is I'll recommend a record that came out, and the response will be like, oh, that band or that artist is still
around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, I always find myself thinking, like, well, what else would they be doing? Yes.
Yeah. They're not in jail. They're not doing 7 to 10 for armed robbery. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, and that's the nature of rock and roll, right? It's a febrile, temporary thing, and that's all right. The new is important. It's important for the new to shine, and it's important for new artists to get hype, because that's how they get careers. If they don't get attention and they don't get that kind of love, then they don't build an audience. Once that happens for you... Ultimately, it's up to you to keep that audience, you know? So while I'd love it if everybody knew we were still around, there's 500,000 people in the world who do, and that's fucking amazing.
Is that even a number you can wrap your head around at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary. You know, like, I got these shitty fucking... Whatever, I shouldn't... I got these statistics from a major streaming outfit the other day.
They do not have green in their logo.
Summarizing our year. Remarkably and very interestingly, the one statistic they left out was how much money we received from the 45 million streams that we racked up, and the 2.5 or whatever million followers, and the 46,000 communities we were listened to in, and et cetera, et cetera. Interesting statistics, guys. Please send me the amount of money I made from that. Because that's not something they necessarily want everybody to see.
No, exactly.
So that's a big issue. And if I was a consumer, and I am, I would be demanding that these streaming services start saying to me, okay, cool, I had this many listening hours. How much of my money went to artists?
Exactly.
How much of my subscription money that I paid this year, my $9.99, show me that statistic. That statistic would be about 12 cents a person out of your $120. So, you know, that's not right.
No.
Sorry. It's just not right. And everybody's terrified of Spotify. I'm terrified of Spotify. I'm terrified that if somebody from Spotify hears this, they'll get grumpy and take me off the fucking acoustic chill playlist. But, you know, the people who work at Spotify that I've met are music lovers.
That's
like,
the thing,
they really love music, and they're just like us. They're just nice people working in the music industry. So somewhere higher up there, people are making decisions that are not moral. And like, we have to all, as a community, both the playlist makers at Spotify and the people who are working over there who are creative, lovely people, and all of us have to say, come on, guys, we want to see where this money goes. This is a black box, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have that group of people. This is going to be our fourth show in New York in a year, and there's going to be 1,000 people here, and it's just, I would die of embarrassment and shame if anyone ever thought that I was complaining about being an artist, because it's my salvation, you know, it's my communion, it's my gift, it's my love.
Yeah.
So I'm just grateful.
Yeah, and I think there's an important level of context to add, because I was just talking about this with my musician friend just a couple hours ago, where there's like a bit of a gap between music fans and musicians when these conversations come up. And I think the thing that can like fill that gap a bit more is that when you look at Spotify, it's important to remember that maybe at some point in time it was like a little plucky startup, but now it is an international corporation.
That's right.
And when you look at the stats specifically, like when it says country specifically, like, it mentions a lot how a lot of people are streamed in like 65 or 67 countries.
Yeah.
And when I see that, someone who understands business to some minor degree, I think, well, hold on, who
collects that money?
Who collects that money, and who also, like, were you asked if you wanted your music to be played in so many countries? Obviously, it's a great thing, but like, who asked you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the label has a deal with Spotify. See, this is, we're one step away all the time.
Yeah.
It's not that we have a deal with Spotify, it's that our label has a deal with Spotify. Some artists personally have a deal with Spotify, but you know, whether it's, look, it is what it is, right? It is now the way people listen to music. So having said that, I think there are all kinds of exciting and interesting things that could happen both with the technology and with the way we approach it that might make it a way better thing for everybody.
Yeah.
And Spotify can still make their money, and we can make our money, and the listener can have a better experience. And you know, this thing of clicking through after 20 seconds is another big issue. Like, maybe Spotify wants this, you know, maybe in the first week of release, if you want to listen to a song, you got to listen to it all the way through. Like, that is possible in the software, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
So there needs to start, because they're so powerful and big, they need to start having, like, internal conversations about, like Facebook is having, and like all online services need to have, about not just the economics and the metrics and the possibilities of what they have, but the morality of it. You know, and unless that happens, my guess is that they will ultimately fail, because I think the moral arc of the universe does bend towards goodness, and like, consumers get sick of feeling like they're supporting something shitty, and eventually people will start to leave the way they're leaving Facebook now.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a complicated thing, man, but if they want the music, if they want the content that creates the website, which makes them ad money, then they got to pay people to make that music. Otherwise, I swear to Christ, I'm opening a bed and breakfast.
Well, I'm more than sure.
And there's huge money in that, people.
There surprisingly really is.
It's a 5-star bed and breakfast. I'm not going to go into the details. I don't want to give it away to my competitors, but let's just say poached eggs.
Well, I want to start asking you about your music, especially particularly the new music you released this year.
Oh, music! All right,
you know, that'll.
No, yeah, that'll fit.
You know, I want to start with Ship to Shore, because I mean, I really love how, like, this kind of touches on how Stars is able to make songs that are delicate yet have a lot of energy to them that still have an oomph, whether it's building up or whether you get it around the corner. What was the energy like in the room when you were making this one?
This is a good question, because I wasn't there. I wasn't there. No, because Amy wrote the lyrics for that, and that was a thing that was dashed off. I was there recording it, but I wasn't there writing it. But it's about Amy's friend John, who died this year. And he's a friend of mine too. I didn't know him as well as Amy was really close to him. And he was this lovely man who ran restaurants and was an oyster shucker and a bon vivant, a really lovely, warm person, and always came to our shows with his wife. And he died of cancer, so Amy wanted to write him a song. But he was a very happy person and a very sort of, had given Amy a lot of joy in her life, so she didn't want to write like a funeral dirge, you know? So she wanted to write something that was, I guess, about accepting the fact that John had had cancer and that you lose people, but also about celebrating, like a song he would have wanted to dance to, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, the energy in the room when writing a song with stars, what's an analogy?
You're good at them.
Seven old men trying to figure out how to use an iPhone. It's like, it's not, it's,
there's, that sounds painful.
You know, the sun doesn't come through the window in shafts. We're not like, you know, drinking coffee out of tasteful cups and smoking Jatan, and then somebody has an inspiration. It's more like, what are you doing there? I don't know. What are you doing there? I don't know yet. Well, let's just do it again then. And then finally something happens, and then you're like, okay, that sounds good.
So it tells me that's much more closer to fact than fiction.
Yeah, man. Like,
exact description.
One of the weird questions you get a lot is, what inspires you, or what's your inspiration? I'm not sure I really believe in it.
Really?
No.
Even in like a
there's stuff I steal. Right? There's stuff that there's an idea that I think is cool, where I'm like, oh, I'm gonna work that over so that nobody recognizes it was somebody else's idea, and I'll kind of make it my idea too. Like Love It If We Made It, which is my favorite song of the year by the 1975. The beginning of that is Downtown Lights by the Blue Nile. Yeah. Same key, same keyboard sound.
Yeah.
And then they blow it up into a nuclear explosion, and it's fucking awesome, but it's definitely like a stone cold rip. Now, were they inspired by the Blue Nile? I mean, I think that you inspire yourself, and that work around you informs what you do.
Yeah.
I think inspiration is really, like, this is a silly, it's just my opinion, but I think inspiration is the domain of nature. Like, I get inspired by nature, by beauty in nature. That's when I feel like, oh my God, life is like this profoundly beautiful thing, and I want to speak on it. But in the actual act of making art, it's like, I have a room, and like, I take all my memories out and put them on the table, and they lie around, and we have some instruments, and we kind of try and make something.
But I imagine it doesn't feel tedious in that way, does it?
Sometimes it's very tedious.
Yeah. Well, the process of making a record, I imagine. But would you say throughout the
Even writing can be very tedious. Inspiration can be very tedious, you know? Like, I've said a lot. I've written a lot of songs. I've written a play. I've written essays. I've talked on the radio a ton. I've said a lot. So what there is left to say, or what, how can I be more clear, I guess, becomes a very technical question. Because, you know, I've only had a few things to say, really. I say the same shit over and over again. I believe in weakness. I believe in loss. That's at the center of everything I do in my life, is that I think we lose together and we win alone. That winning is a fascist idea. It's for Donald Trump. It's a delusion, and it's a denial of reality. Like, this game, we lose. There's my center idea, okay? So I've spent 25 years trying to express that to people in a way that will make them go, yeah, I think that's probably true, you know? But it's not like I'm like, oh shit. You know, sometimes I'll have good ideas for TV shows or something like that. Like, that's an inspiration, I guess. But at the core of what I'm doing now is more like a meditation.
Yeah.
It's a concentration. It's a practice. So sometimes it's tedious to do your practice, but you do it because in doing it, you express yourself, and that's what the purpose of being on this earth is, right? So
I think that's very true indeed. You know, I think I definitely want to start asking you something else, but before we get off this track, I think one of the reasons that question probably crops up, the inspiration element, is it probably comes from a perspective of someone not I want to word this correctly. Someone feeling like they're not capable of expressing themselves in
totally.
That
and I get that in other contexts. Like, I don't... there's, you know... I truly don't understand how people do all kinds of things, you know? Like, talk about, like, where do you find the strength to be a nurse in a burn unit for children? Like, that happens every day. You go in every single day. You see children suffering. You see families suffering. You see children die. You see kids you can't help. How do you do that every day? Well, that's the kind of people they are. They find that strength, and they've made that separation within themselves where they're able to leave it there to a certain degree. And on balance, they find more happiness and inspiration in helping people than they do in having to watch them suffer. So I have no idea how they do it.
That's beautiful.
I couldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a good point. But I imagine if you were to talk to someone who does that, they would probably describe
the tedium.
Yeah,
like, how the hell do you get up on stage and sing? I'd be so scared. It's like, how do you go to the hospital every day and deal with kids crying? I'd have a breakdown.
One Day Left is one of those tracks that immediately grabs you and demands that you pay attention every word. And I say this because I'm one of those music fans that will typically listen to a song for almost like a year.
And then be like, oh, that's what they're talking
about.
Yeah,
quite literally. It happens, like, pretty much, I'd say, 60% of the time.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
I wonder with a song like that, where the words just leapt out. Is there...
Yeah, it was very quickly written.
Yeah?
Yeah. I had, I Live My Life in Coffee Cups. There you go. Stolen from T.S. Eliot, right? I Measure My Life in Coffee Cups. That's basically a paraphrasing of T.S. Eliot. That's the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. So... thought that's a beautiful idea, and then it's like Sudoku with songs like that. I spend the day alone too much, so now I have a person, right? I have a lonely person who drinks coffee alone, and then I knew that I wanted it to be a duet, so there's Amy. So we go into that world immediately of like those characters that we play, those people that have been having a conversation for almost 20 years now, and then it just kind of writes itself in a way. Sometimes songs just like, they're, you know, it was a simple pop song. It was about, you know what else inspired that song? The chorus goes, hold your breath when the sirens are calling your name.
Yeah.
There's this band called Real Lies. You know that band?
I feel like
I do. You know that band, Hector? Dude, check them out. They're amazing. They're from England. And they're sort of a disco band, like they sound a bit like New Order, a bit like the Pet Shop Boys, but lots of 90s house in it.
Okay.
But the guy talks over it, and I'm always a sucker for gloomy English guys talking over music. And he sent out a tweet that said, hold your breath and wait for the next siren. If you die, you're not living in London. And holy I shit. Thought that was such a beautiful thing to say. I was like, fuck, that's so beautiful. That's such a great way of expressing the city, the noise of the city. So I stole that too.
He's probably listening out like, you motherfucker.
Yeah, he probably is. But neither of us can afford a lawyer, so it'll be fine. Let's duke it out on the streets.
But what you said there about how it's a song that writes, essentially wrote itself, I felt like that when I was listening to it, that it probably was that. And you know, in regards to Amy and like the duet element, I mean, I don't want to ask particularly how you guys write together, but in regards to talking about a song as you're writing, is there
ever
much of that?
We rarely do. Yeah, we don't write together much. Like, you know, songs that you don't know, that's the thing. It's like, people might think that stuff that is being sung by somebody has been written by them, but that's not how it works. It's usually that Amy takes the lyrics or I take the lyrics for the most, whether I sing it or not, or she sings it or not, or it's a duet. That's not really relevant so much.
Yeah.
And then we do like little add-ons to each other's stuff to like change the course of the story a little bit, but it's not, we don't actually sit together and like collaborate, because I'm not sure how you do that really with lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, I know people do it, but it's a much more technical approach than the one we take, I would say.
Well, do you ever find yourselves asking the other person about a particular lyric, just kind of like out of a sense of confusion? Or
yeah,
like...
for sure. We have conversations about them, but, you know, sometimes Amy doesn't like when I swear.
No.
But,
oh, she's
you
such
know,
a lovely
she doesn't
person.
Fucking understand rock and roll, man. The kids love fucking swearing.
This is a podcast of the last word.
Yeah, yeah. So I've always wanted to call one of our albums Total Fucking Darkness, but nobody will let me. I just think it's such a great name for an album.
I love the fact that you brought up the 1975, particularly because of the song I want to ask you about next. Kind of reminds me of them just slightly. Are You With Me? It kind of reminds me of their song, one of the newer ones, Sincerity Is Scary.
Oh, yeah.
It's in regards to the cadence and just kind of like the expression you have for this.
I love the 1975. I think they're great.
I used to travel with them during their first album.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're lovely awesome. Guys. Yeah,
they're awesome. I like them a lot. Just pointing out, Manchester again, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. Manchester exactly. again.
But yeah, I brought up that song because honestly, that's one of those songs where like when I hear it, I just think to myself like, how is someone able to distill emotion within this way? And I wonder like, does a song like that at all feel different? Like when you have a song that's so clearly, that's evoking such feeling. I mean, all your songs do, but I imagine there are higher points than others. And I feel like with this song, you've really hit something.
That was very emotional because Kevy made it with us. Kevin Drew from Broken Social Scene made it with us.
Amazing human
being. He's an amazing human being. He's going to be here tonight. And he came down to Montreal. We had been hanging out in Vancouver. And he was like, dude, let's make a song. Let's just fucking do it. We'd been talking for years. And so I said, okay, we're going to write a song next week in Montreal. Come. So he came. And... you know, Kev's been dealing all year with losing Gord Downey, who is a brother of his, a compatriot and a co-worker, and he really helped Gord make his last few works of art, which are beautiful, but I think it cost Kevin a lot, you know, to watch your friend die was a tough thing, and he's still getting over that, and we all are. Anybody who knew Gord still feels sad about it, and I had gotten... drunk somewhere, I can't remember where, one night, like one of those drunks where you're like, I'll just go to the cafe and write by myself. And then before you know it, you've had like four glasses of wine, you're like, actually I'm kind of fucking hammered, I love being a writer. But I started like sending texts to Gord's old phone number because his brother kept it open, so you can send Gord a message.
Oh wow.
So I started writing Gord messages, you know, into the great beyond. So, and Kevin kept saying to me, like, when we do this song, like, are you with me? You know what I mean? Like, are you with me? I'm like, I don't really know what you're talking about. But then eventually I was like, oh, right. You know, you know, I had a visitation from my father 3 nights ago on the bus. You have very vivid dreams on the bus. And the difference between a dream and a visitation is a dream is a dream. And a visitation, which I've had 4 or 5 times in my life, is a visit from a dead person. Like, it is as real as sitting here with you right now. And my dad visited me, like, 4 nights ago. Suddenly, I was awake, I was sitting at a table, and there he was. Three-dimensional. Just in a fucking cool jacket. And I was like, Dad! It's fucking you! And then slowly, my mind slowly was like, oh, no, it can't be. He's gone. And then he just evaporated in front of me. But it was... he came to me, you know? So that song is just... like a few of our songs is kind of an attempt to communicate with the dead, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a big thing where I think that song really latched onto me, like why I found it so moving is that, I mean, my favorite thing with music is like when musicians can say things that we all feel and we all think, but we never say out loud. And yeah. I feel like that's what you achieved with that song. It's like,
thank you, man. Yeah. Thank you. Well,
it's a really beautiful piece
if you
work.
Keep it simple, it tends to be true. Oh. I should go soon.
You really should.
I should.
You should.
I shouldn't talk so much before shows, but I like talking to you.
I do appreciate it. Well, can I do one more before we turn?
Absolutely.
One more.
Absolutely. And have me back anytime, man.
I would honestly love
to. You're great at this, and I know you love music, I can tell.
I appreciate that.
It's really nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much. Yeah. I really do appreciate that. Well, I mean, it's a semi-boring one, but I promise we can, like, expand in an exciting way.
Oh, I'll make it interesting.
You definitely will. Well, all these, I mean, 3 new songs in a year, and it's obviously leading up to a new album. I know you can't say much.
Or is the age of the album over?
It definitely isn't.
Will we just be sending Hector singles every 3 months through the slave over? No, I mean, we're going to try and make a record with Kev, I think. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah?
Yep. We're going to try and make a record with Kevin.
That's a long time coming.
And we're going to do a play.
Really?
Well, not a play so much as a sort of... it's a concert, but it's going to be us talking about our lives as well. We're going to talk about... stars and play music with this friend of mine who's a director who did the one-man show that I do. We're going to do that, and we're going to maybe play some shows with orchestras because we're about to do that in Ottawa. We're about to play with a 90-piece orchestra, so Then we'll have a bunch of charts, so we're hoping we can take those charts around and play some shows, hopefully in New York and LA.
That's crazy.
Other places, so yeah, but you know,
that's something you guys have never done before. Imagine.
Never done. We're trying to do new things because you got to diversify.
It's true. Know?
In this world, you got to get your money from lots of different sections of the artistic world, and that's fine. It's our time, you know. We got 15 years left before we're old, and we got to make some money and make an impact and like do something beautiful, you know. So I think we all feel very motivated to make beautiful things right now.
I think it's more appropriate to say you want to do more beautiful things, because you have done a lot of beautiful
things. It's like a revolutionary act these days to do beautiful things, you know. It's so ugly out there. Everybody who contributes to any kind of even little quotidian beautiful tiny beauty is a revolutionary in my eyes.
Oh, that's definitely the best point to leave off at. Tor, thanks so much for catching over here.
It's always a pleasure, man.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the show tonight.
Likewise.